Hi, I'm Dr. Rona Novick. For those who weren't here the first time, and those who were, welcome back. I have a handout about time management. So take one and pass, and the extras can stay in the back so if people come in, they can get them. And you're right, time management, we should start on time, we should finish on time, I should have enough time for questions, we'll see how good I am of that. How many people here are old enough, we'll date ourselves here, to remember watching the Ed Sullivan Show? There was, I know some of you are too young, but I'll try to paint the picture. There was on the Ed Sullivan Show, in addition to singers and dancers, there would always be certain almost like kind of circus act performers, and there was one performer who had spinning plates. He would line up 12 poles, and on the 12 poles he would put plates, and he would spin them. And he would run down, and as he would get one spinning, this one would wobble and he would go over here. And then this one would wobble and they would go over here. And this, to me, is the picture of time management in raising a family. This is what it is. There is not a day goes by that I do not feel that I am running from plate to plate. And of course, some would fall and crack. Hopefully, those are not the crucial things that fall on my plates that crack. But all of us are spinning multiple things at once. And many of the things that we are spinning need constant or frequent attention or reattention to keep them from falling and cracking to pieces. The segment always was played with, you know, that fast flight of the bumblebee music in the background, just in case, you know, your kishkas weren't already eaten up watching the plates fall, to get you more riled up. But it was over in all of 30 seconds. We do this every day. We do this constantly. And, you know, it's amazing that we do it. All family life is, in fact, very hectic. And I think that living a committed religious life is even more, in some ways, even more hectic. And one of the things I want you for sure to leave with here today is the concept that time management is a process. There will be good days and bad days. If a plate falls and cracks, don't say, oh, forget it, I can't do this time management stuff. It's part of learning to do time management is sometimes failing, and it takes time. You have to stay the course and give it the time that it takes. But I want to share with you 5 steps of time management. And I could have made, you know, 25 steps, but then we wouldn't have time to do them all. So trying to keep it simple. And the bottom line is you can't do time management in an hour. It really is a lifelong problem and issue to address. But this first step of time management is to think about priorities. Is to say, of those plates spinning up there, which ones are the most important? Think about what you did today. Today's a Sunday. Think about what you're going to do tomorrow. Tell me, what are the biggest priorities that you have on your calendar today, which is a weekend day, and tomorrow a business day? What are some of the things that are the big priorities? So getting them up, getting them to school, taking care of them, feeding them, clothing them, all the stuff. I mean, children is a multifaceted task. They're not on autopilot. You know, it takes a lot to keep the children spinning. Okay, what else? What else people have literally on their plate for today, tomorrow? Work, what else? Anybody here drive carpools? Transportation? Anybody here cook? Need food in your house? You know, anybody here in my neighborhood, they have a group called the Sandwich Club. I'm now a card-carrying member of the Sandwich Club. You know what the Sandwich Club is? Yeah. Taking care of aging parents at the same time as you try to raise the children as you're aging. Gray hairs all over the place, right? That's the sandwich generation, and we have a sandwich club in my neighborhood. So that's also sometimes taking care of older family members as well. One of the things that's very helpful in time management is to separate out essentials versus luxuries. What do I absolutely, we'll talk about scheduling a little bit later, what is an absolute priority for me? What is, no matter what, this has to get done. The kids, you know, children have to be fed. That means food has to be in the house. That means I have to have done the grocery shopping. It means there needs to be gas in the car. This is a number one priority, has to happen. Especially we're now in the winter, you know, I listen always like 2 or 3 days ahead to think, what's the weather report? Oh, Thursday would be my normal day for shopping, but there's going to be a blizzard, so I better change the schedule around so I have food in the house for Wednesday. You know, you have to do those kind of planning things. There's a famous time management paradigm, the pickle jar time management theory, and it goes like this. If you have a big empty pickle jar, and you fill it first with rocks, it will look like it's full. The rocks are your number one priorities. Those are the big items that have to get done. I have to take care of the kids. I need food in the house. I have to go to work. I have to earn a living. Those are the big rocks. But in fact, there's room still in the jar if now you put in small pebbles. Because in between the rocks, there are going to be little spaces. And you could actually fit more in that jar if you fit in pebbles. The pebbles are the things that are perhaps not as critical. They're not my number one priorities. And they also don't take as much time. Children is a big rock that's going in that pickle jar. But maybe, you know, I don't know, visiting a neighbor is a small pebble. It's not as labor intensive. It's very fixed and small. Well, even after I've got the rocks and the pebbles in there, the jar may seem full, but if I have little grains of sand and I pour it in that pickle jar, it's still going to fit. And finally, I could still pour in water when the jar looks full, and there's going to be room. And that's the secret, by the way, of time management for incredibly busy people, that you will read about time management that says, that stops at the rocks. That says, okay, schedule your big things. You know, that's what you can fit in. And I have news for you. If you are running a family, you can't stop at the rocks. You'll never go, you know, you need to be able to fit in the pebbles, the sand, and the water, and fit in the other things around those big demands that you have as parents. Stress reduction has to be a number one priority for time management. I asked for paper, and we forgot to take care of paper, but... the reason that stress management is a priority is, has anybody found that when you're really, really, really under stress, you don't function as well? You start to forget things. You make a list of what you need at the grocery store, leave the list at home, and have to go 4 extra times to buy what you needed. There's a relationship between stress and performance that I call, it's called the stress performance curve, but I call it the stress performance cliff. And I don't have a blackboard, so I'll just kind of draw it in the air. But as your stress increases, so does your performance. It's why actors and actresses like getting stage fright. It's why athletes like getting juiced. It's why, you know, doctors want to be a little bit pumped before a procedure, before I give a, you know, presentation. I want to be a little bit stressed about it. I don't want to say I don't care. And that will continue. Your performance will continue, and then it will level off, where even if your stress increases, your performance isn't getting any better until you hit the cliff. And then what happens is, if stress continues, your performance drops precipitously. It's not a slow decline. You hit the stress performance cliff, you cease to function. I mean, really, we fall apart. I know this has happened to me. My family all knows when it happens, because they all say, oh my gosh, she's a wreck this week. You know, don't ask mom for anything. She can't remember where she put her head. When you get to high levels of stress, you don't perform well. And even at fairly moderate levels of stress, you'll start to see chinks in your armor. And if you're running a tight ship, and if you are trying to do time management, then stress is going to be a number one enemy. My ABCs of stress management: avoid, buffer, and change. Avoid those things that can be avoided. We'll get to how you do this later, because it takes some planning, which I'll talk about later. But I'm from New York. There are things one does not do in New York, like you do not go to the bank on lunch hour. You do not. It will take you 10 hours longer than if you go on an off time or you get direct deposit. Direct deposit is like one of the best inventions I've ever seen, because I haven't set foot in a bank in years. I avoid the stress of standing there, you know, waiting for that line to move so I can deposit the paycheck, so I can do the food shopping and put the food on the table and pay every, you know, get everything taken care of. Avoid those things that you can avoid. Now, one cannot avoid all stressors. That mother-in-law that makes you a little crazy, or the annual Thanksgiving dinner that is hard because Great Aunt Millie comes and she's always a nudge. That you can't avoid everything in life that is stressful. So what you can't avoid, you buffer. Buffering means that you literally make sure you're insulated and prepared. And that simply may mean things as simple as taking care of your biology, like getting a good night's sleep the night before and not going famished to that. You have Canadian Thanksgiving, yes? It's just not the same as ours. It's not the same as ours, but you have, what's it, Columbus Day? Okay. whatever holiday you're celebrating, that you don't go famished so that you're a total wreck. I found, by the way, when I was when my children were much younger, I would rush home from work to get home to meet them, you know, right at the end of the school day, and I would be a horrible mother. I would walk in the door with them, and I was irritable, and I was edgy, and I realized I was like hypoglycemic. I hadn't eaten for hours. I'm dehydrated, that if I took 5 extra minutes and had a cup of tea, that I walked in the door a different mom. That's just the buffering that was, ate an apple, had a carrot stick. Better that I take those few extra minutes. It was better time management. It was better buffering, so I wasn't so stressed when I walked in the door. And the change of stress management is to learn and to use those tools that actually help deal with stress management, like relaxation, deep breathing techniques, imagery. If we have time, maybe I will do them with you later, as a ways of decreasing the negative impacts of stress. It's going to sound very silly, but sleep and nutrition are a priority. We are a woefully underslept, overtired civilization. We are all. I really believe that road rage and the increasing highway accidents, and that it's not just cell phones. It's that we are operating heavy machinery when we have no business doing so, and that we really need, our bodies need much more than we are giving them in terms of sleep and nutrition. Now, you know, we'll talk about time management, and those of you who have very young children know how hard it is to get reasonable and decent night's sleep when you're raising little ones, and I know that that is hard. But looking for ways to be sure that you are taking care of basic biology is an important component of time management. Yeah.
Throw exercise in there.
Yes, exercise is, I'm sorry I left it off. It should be there. Should be on either change or sleep and nutrition. The thing about exercise is that exercise is actually curative. It is not only a stress management tool, but it actually is an insulator. It can cure a lot of the negative impacts of stress. The trick with exercise is busy people will say, yeah, I really need to exercise, but I don't have time. It's going to stress me out more to try to find the time. And it's really takes a lot of work and effort and creativity to figure out how to make exercise a part of your life, so that you do get all of the positive health benefits as well as stress management benefits for it. And the one good news about exercise is that 20 years ago, people were talking about needing levels of exercise, both for stress and health, that were unrealistic for most of us. You know, that most of you had to be marathon runners in order, they would say, you know, you needed 40 minutes of jogging a day, 4 to 5 days a week to get the benefits of exercise. They have increasingly found that much smaller amounts of exercise still give us benefit, that 2 30-minute periods of exercise a week give you benefit, that 3 15-minute periods of exercise a week give you benefit. So that rather than saying, well, if I can't do 4 40 minutes, you know, but it's useless, I'm not doing anything, that really finding any way to incorporate it into your life is going to help. Step 2, know thyself and know your family. Every family has its own relationship with time. Every family has their own way of looking at, understanding, and reading the clock. And by the way, we do not marry people who necessarily have our own understandings of time. Anybody here chronically late? Anybody here chronically early? Anybody here married to someone who's the opposite of what they are? It's much better that way? It can be, but it can also be very difficult. I mean, if you have 2 chronically late people, you never get anywhere. I mean, and by the way, you probably, in your extended family, I find that in a lot of extended families, there will be a couple who everybody jokes about, oh yeah, they'll get here. You know, if it's a wedding, they'll be here by dessert. The Viennese table's coming out, they're arriving. You know, and that's the couple where you got 2 chronically late people married to each other. But people have their own relationship with time. Couples have their own relationship with time. It may come from your family of origin. You know, you may have been taught by your parents, always be on time, always be on time. And so now you're always be on time. Or you may have responded to growing up in a house of always be on time, always be on time, always be on time by saying, I don't care about time. Life's too short. I'm going to stroll in when I'm ready. So I find people either react to or copy the families that they came from. People also have their own particular way of measuring time. I would venture to say that if I asked any one of you how long your shower takes at night or in the morning, regardless of when you shower, and then had you actually time yourself, that you would be off by a significant amount of time. There's no clock in here with a second hand, but I sometimes do this, that I ask people to, starting now, tell me when a minute is up. And you would be amazed at how bad we are at knowing how long a minute is, knowing how long 5 minutes is, how long 10, 15, 20, so that if we can't adequately be aware of the measurement of time, we can't manage it well. So if you want to do an experiment when you're at home, just make a list of some things that you usually do and write down next to it how long they take, and then once time yourself and see how long. And you'll notice where you're off and what you think takes 5 minutes. I woke up my son this morning. They actually had school finals today. So I woke them up this morning, and the response I got from my 17-and-a-half-year-old when I said to him, the car is going to be here to pick you up in 10 minutes. He says, so what are you waking me for? I don't need 10 minutes. I showered last night. I said, you need 10 minutes to brush your teeth. It takes you 10 minutes to say good morning. You're slow as molasses in the mornings. 10 minutes is not enough time. And he is arguing with me that, no, 10 minutes is way too long. His estimate of time is totally not matched with reality. Then again, teenagers are one of the worst, by the way. They're very bad as a group. Adolescents are very bad at time estimates. Young children also. If one of the issues in time management is that as parents, we will say to very young children, we have to leave in 5 minutes. Get ready. We're getting in ready in 5 minutes. You might as well talk about the Ice Age. They have no concept of time before the age of about 7 or 8. And even then, their concept is very clock-focused. So they can say 5 minutes on the clock is when the hand goes from the 12 to the 1, but they can't feel 5 minutes in the world. So if you say to them, we need to be ready in 5 minutes, you're talking totally irrelevant languages. When my children were very little, we vacationed regularly in New Hampshire at 7.5 hours. So the kids would, 2 minutes after you're in the car, how long till we're there? We realized that saying, 7 hours, 6 hours was irrelevant. So we started saying, what were they into then? Ninja Turtles. We'd say, it's 6 Ninja Turtle shows. It's now 4 Ninja Turtle shows till we get to New Hampshire. Because they kept time in about how long a half an hour TV show is. That they could understand. But to say, we have to leave in 5 minutes, they don't get it. They're not going to get it. Think about in your family, what are your time eaters? And every family has these. Either, again, you personally, or your children, or your spouse. Think about what are the things that are your downfalls in your home. Anybody want to share? What are your... The telephone. The telephone is a big time eater. And on two things. One, it's a distractor, so that you could be very focused in working in a very good time management way doing task A. The phone rings, and now you're off task. You've gotten drawn away. But the other thing is that telephone is another area where we're horrific. We say, oh, I was just on the phone for a minute, 17 minutes later. And by the way, now a lot of the phones have displays of how long you've been talking. I know I look at mine at work and I'm like, wow, that was a 20-minute conversation. I wish I was a lawyer and I billed by the minute. That I didn't know I was on the phone so long. Telephone, what else? Television. Right, right. Getting out of, and I have to tell you, you told me before, you have little ones. Well, I have 3 teenage boys who can totally independently dress themselves, and invariably, oops, I forgot the Walkman. Oops, I can't tell you how many times we lock and unlock the door of the house when we're going someplace. Wait, I didn't bring my sweatshirt. Wait, no, you didn't tell me I needed a muffler. You know, somebody always has to go back. So it is. It's like a process to get everybody out of the house, no matter how efficient you are. But other time eaters may be personal issues around time, like procrastination, like disorganization. They may not be things like the telephone, and we'll talk about how you deal with some of those in a moment. It also helps to think about, as a family, what in the family do you have as your organizational strengths and downfalls? You cannot separate out, by the way, time management from basic organizational skills. because so much of what we need to, like getting out of the house is a perfect example. Well, as much as that takes time, if you have one boot on the first floor and the second boot hasn't been seen for a month, it is going to take you longer to get out of the house than if boots always go lined up together with a clip on them on the first floor of the closet underneath in the bin marked boots. You know, that family has at least the chance of getting out of the house faster because they're more organized in general, even separate from time management. And we'll talk about organization in a moment. But some families have an incredible organizational strengths. They're, you know, if you happen to have children who are neat, it helps. If you have children who... I can't think of the word for it. I can only think of the opposite. You know, children who are not space cadets. You know, the children. It's harder to do time management with the child who, I have one of these, literally walks out the front door to go to school without shoes on, and only when they touch the pavement say, "Oh, I need shoes." You know, that is a harder child to time manage because they're just not tuned in to where their head is at any point in time. Never mind that they don't have shoes on their body. So, by the way, this is not just children. If your spouse is walking around saying, where are my glasses? What do I do with my glasses? And they're on their head, you're going to have more time management issues. If you have a family of procrastinators who always want to do things at the very last minute or the day after they're due or wait until you've had three reminder notices from school that the permission slip has to come in, then again, it's going to be harder to get things done. What tools and supports do you have available? And the tools and supports that you have in your family for time management are mostly human tools and supports. We joke in our house that my 12-year-old's in charge, runs the household. Ever since we can remember, how many children ask for a pad of yellow sticky notes when they're about six? It's scary. But he wanted yellow sticky notes. Why? We went up to his bedroom and we found that on his nightstand next to his dresser, next to his bed when he goes to bed, this is written, P-A-K-L-U-C-H, pack lunch. Can't spell, but he's writing himself notes at six. What else would be written, you know? Take knapsack, T-A-K-N-A-P-S-A-C. But this is what he does. He does it to all of us. We find yellow stickies all over the house. Ima, buy pants. You know, Abba. I don't know. You drive carpool tomorrow. He leaves us all stickies. He literally is like the tickler system in our family to remind everybody of everything, including his older brothers. I see him as a family resource. I don't know what we've told him. He can never go to college. We can't handle life without him. He can't go away in the summers because we need him to keep us structured and organized. But you have to think about what other supports do you have available. You may have very organized. You may be very organized. You may have an organized spouse. You may have a house that lends itself in its layout to organization and structure. One of the big issues for many of us is not having enough space for everything, to put everything in its place. Even something as silly as you look at this room has organization structures in it. When you walk in the door, there are cubbies. Without that, right by the door, if the cubbies were up here, there would be a much higher risk that the little darlings, I'm assuming this is a nursery room, that the little darlings, when they come in here in the morning, might drop coats, boots, mittens over there, and they might not make it to their cubbies. But whoever set up this room had the idea, very wisely, that we're going to put the structure where it's most likely to serve our purposes. Not all of us have cubbies right where our, you know, children walk in or we walk in the door. How do you and your family respond to stress and pressure? And remember that families are made up of different individuals. So here the challenge is you may be a really great all-nighter puller. You may be terrific down to the wire. The Seder is 2 hours from now, and you are still making your Seder plate, buying your matzah, and getting ready for Passover. Or do you live with somebody who can't stand the pressure when you leave everything till the last minute and needs it done 3 weeks before? And again, sometimes it's better, as you said before, to have a blend in a family. Sometimes it can make for some interesting conversations as there's discrepancy and disagreement about how do we, which tack are we going to take? I often find that this is a huge issue with school-age children and homework and reports and projects when there is a mismatch between parent and child, with either the parent being, do it at the last minute, we don't have to rush, and the child being, no, I like it done way ahead in advance, or more often, the child being, well, the night before I'll mention to you that I need a diorama, I need 14 kinds of oak tag, I need 7 different colors of construction paper, some crayons, tape, and glue. Is the store still open? It's only 10 o'clock. Can you go get it for me now, Ma? And the parent who says, what do you mean you didn't tell me? And you've known this for weeks, and why didn't I know? So I have to think about how people deal with time pressure and stress. And the other point is, how can all members of the house contribute to effective time management, which also means effective management of the household? And this brings us to the issue of chores. I am a firm believer that a family is an entity that works best when everybody contributes in some way, and that even, you know, from the earliest time when kids can help, that they should be encouraged to have some responsibility and some age-appropriate chores to do. There are other people who will argue with me, and by the way, if you think that saying this to your children will be greeted by them saying, thank you, mother and father, for giving me responsibility in the house. I very much appreciate making my bed and missing that 10 minutes of TV. I know you're teaching me adult responsibility. This is going to put me in good stead growing up. You're fools. They are going to greet your suggesting or introducing chores by saying, nobody else has to do this, it's not fair, and I'm only a kid, and why do I have to do this, and I'm not going to do it. It's not going to be necessarily welcomed and good-spirited. There's a woman, and I'm blocking on her name, who wrote a book about effective strategies for busy families, and she talks about making chores a very integral part of family life and making them fun. And so taking a day when everybody puts a sock on their hand and goes around dusting the house, you know, and sock puppets, and they have races up and down the banister, and they each takes a room, and, you know, with little kids making jobs into fun jobs. And even with teenagers, she suggests things like saying, listen, I will be your chauffeur for a day. I will drive you anywhere you need, the mall. I will be at your beck and call. But today, you're the upstairs maid for me. You're going to do the house cleaning, help with the shopping, the unloading, whatever. That's what's going to happen. There are all different ways that you can work with children to give them responsibility and chores, whether it is a chore, you know, kind of a list, a task assignment that everybody knows what their jobs are and that it's a rotating list, whether it's a spin the wheel and you see what your task is for today. But the bottom line is, I do think it's important for children to recognize that a family works because we each do something to make it work. We all do something to make it work, and how can they contribute even in a small way? Yeah. There are two ways to think about it that way. I hear what you're saying. That if you attach allowance, then it's like, well, I don't need the quarter for making my bed, so I'm not making my bed. On the other hand, if you say make your bed and there is, you know, but you get your allowance no matter what, my concern is, then why would I give you allowance? If you're not contributing, you know, if I give you a dollar allowance at the end of the week, whether you're nasty or nice, whether you make your bed or not, then that also feels funny to me, sending the message that you always get a dollar from me regardless of your behavior. So I think that there are multiple ways to do it, and that typically I would say that it's perfectly fine to make some parameters for allowance and say, you know, this is the allowance and here's what you generally provide for the family. But at the same time to say, I mean, I would never say in my house, you know, you clear off your dishes when you're done eating. I mean, that's just what you do. It's not, I'm not going to say to a 17-and-a-half-year-old, you know, well, that's 35 cents taken off your allowance for that fork you didn't take, and you forgot this. And I just say, you know, excuse me, but there's something you forgot here, kiddo. And they come back and do it. The other thing is that attitude makes a huge difference around chores. And if your attitude is, you know, military drill sergeant and you're very tough and tight about it, then it's hard to engage kids. But if the attitude is, guys, you know what? It's been a long week. We all are bushed. What do you say? Let's do this together. Let's get it over in 5 minutes. I invented something in my house called a sweep. A sweep in my house means we start at the front door, we work our way to the back door, and anything that isn't where it belongs, we take care of. And I've said to three boys in my house, I said, listen, a sweep takes us, I mean, for me to clean the whole downstairs of the house will take me an hour. If I have the three of us together 15 minutes, we can sweep the first floor of this house of anything that doesn't belong here. And everything gets to the right. I happen to have an old Tudor house that has four living levels on it. So it's like, it would take me forever to bring the things to the basement that go in the basement, things on the main floor, things upstairs. I said, if it's four of us, the three boys and I, we can start at the front door, make our way to the back door, and kind of sweep up anything that doesn't belong there. And it just, you know, we do it in the spirit of camaraderie. Again, teenage boys, you think they say, oh, yay, rah, rah, let us all have fun together and do a sweep with Ima. Great. They say, and I have to say, come on, guys, I watch football with you. Do this for your old ma. You know, you gotta find a way to engage kids around it and make it a little bit light and pleasant. And at the same time, tell them that you really, really appreciate their help and that they make a huge difference in the family life. I want to move on so I don't run out of time for my time management. Step three in time management is stuff. We have to learn the laws of stuff. And the laws of stuff is that stuff makes more stuff. That as much space as you have, it gets filled with stuff. And that if you do not take care of stuff quickly, it literally breeds. And it gets harder to get rid of. So that when mail comes into the house, if you're like me, 3/4 of the mail you get is junk mail. If it doesn't immediately get filed as junk mail in the garbage, it sits around. And then you have a big pile of stuff, and now it's a big job to go through it. Stuff is always easier to take care of earlier. If you leave it to pile up, it's going to take you more time because you're going to have to deliberate. And the general rule about sorting in good time management and organization management is the rule of threes. That you can think of it as red, yellow, green. And that is, the green is what I absolutely know what to do with right at this minute, and it's going where it belongs. I've got a bill. I paid it. It's in the mail. It's filed. Green. It's easy. Also green is garbage. It's junk mail. I got invited to go to a play I'm never going to go see. In the garbage, green, it's taken care of. Your green box should be empty. It's literally things you're going to process easily, immediately. Yellow, in the middle. I got this mailing about a workshop that's coming up. I don't know. Am I going to go? Am I not going to go? I need to check about it, but I want to save it because maybe I'll go to it. And so that's the yellow box. It's undecided, and the red is kind of long-term filing. These are things maybe I can't, for whatever reason, it's for taxes. I can't do it right now. But here in the box are going to be all the things that I need for a longer-term project that I can't throw out. It's not going to be focused on immediately, but I'm going to do it soon. And we kind of need this same red, yellow, green every time our children come home with a packet of notes from school, every time mail comes into the house, every time you come home, I don't know if it happens here, but every simcha, every bar mitzvah, every wedding, you come home with stuff now. Right? You come home with the fancy hats that they dance with, and you come home with the invitation, and you come home with your place card. And how many of these am I going to save? I mean, I don't need them anymore. But I used to come home, whatever pocketbook I took in the fancy pocketbook to the bar mitzvah, to the wedding, had the stuff from the bar mitzvah, the wedding in it until we went to the next bar. And then I would have to decide, am I keeping this? Am I saving it? Now we try when they come into the house to just immediately say, we don't really need 8,000 yellow maracas. You know, from Jeremy's bar mitzvah, let's throw them away. We really don't need this. Actually, I think that these notions and laws about stuff either come from the yellow or the orange book, either the Idiot's Guide to Time Management or, you know, everything you always wanted to know about the yellow books or the orange books or the idiot guides. The real estate laws of stuff are that we have a very bad habit in our lives of not thinking about the real estate notion of location, location, location. You know, that's the notion in real estate, that everything's about location. Well, when it comes to stuff and organization, it's also all about location. Your kitchen counter should not have the red stuff on it that needs to be dealt with at some point in the future. Your kitchen counter should have the green immediate or maybe a box for yellow. Right at your fingertips should be phone lists that you use daily. They shouldn't be filed somewhere in a cabinet underneath four things and behind seven others. But we have a tendency sometimes to not organize ourselves to use the household real estate in the best way and to put the stuff that we need for better time management literally in arm's reach and get the other stuff packed away. One great strategy if you have young children, by the way, that not only has to do with time management but just with keeping them happy. One of the problems with young children is they have so much stuff in terms of toys that cleaning it all up and getting it all organized takes a lot of time. Take half of it and pack it away. Put half of it out of reach, out of sight, out of mind. Every 3 months, rotate it. It's like getting new toys. It's like Hanukkah every day of the week. Ooh, presents! I haven't seen my Legos! They're so excited because it was packed away. But you also now have half the cleanup job because half of the stuff is rotated out or away. Okay. You need structures and habits to eliminate both old stuff and to make sure new stuff coming in goes in the right places. You cannot expect the people in your house, for example, to always put the boots in the front closet if you don't have a place for boots in the front closet and you don't have the structure and you don't have the shoe rack. You can't expect your spouse to always leave the car keys that you need for the car on a peg that's marked keys if you don't have a peg marked keys. And so you need the bins, the boxes, the pegs, the all of that, and sometimes it takes time to put those time management structures in place. One of the biggest problems we face with time management and organization is that I guarantee if I walked into any house, there would be a backlog of stuff that needs to get taken care of. And so we tend to say, well, I can't really take care of the fact that we don't ever have a place for keys until I clean off the back desk. When I clean off that desk by the back door, then I'll put a dish on the desk in the back by the back door with everybody's car keys in it. But until I clean off the desk, which is a huge, monumental task, we can't get that structure in place. And what I'm going to suggest is that sometimes you have to say, you know what, forget the old garbage. Sometimes I would even suggest a, a terrible strategy that one of the women we had clean once years ago did in our house, and it took us months to undo it. And that's to just take everything that's out, that is keeping you from getting organized, and put it in a box, a bin, a bag, and say, I'll get to that when I get to that, but I'm starting fresh. I'm not throwing anything out because maybe there's something important there. I'm just putting it all away, and I'm getting the back desk cleaned off and putting three bins on it so that every day when the mail comes in, the mail gets immediately sorted and dealt with. Sometimes you have to start clean and fresh, but don't lock yourself in, say, I can't do that until I take care of everything else. Okay. And if you really, really, really have trouble with stuff, get help. There, believe it or not, are professional organizers. There are people who come into your house and clean up your stuff, who will, whether it's California closets, or there really are, if you look in the New York Times under, you know, I think in the Sunday magazine, there are actual organizations. You can go online. They're Organizers Anonymous or something. They will come and they will put the structures in place into your house. And I, you know, working clinically, I've worked with families where this is such a big issue that literally houses have had to be condemned or, you know, so much has collected that people cannot function and they really need professional help. Hopefully none of us are at that level. But don't be proud. If you need somebody to come help organize you, even if it's a friend or neighbor, consider doing it. Okay, step four, learn to tell time. And I mean that in two ways. First, to tell time how you want to use it, but also learn to tell time. I talked about discovering your personal and family clock, but next, let's say you've discovered I'm one of those people who's always early or I'm one of those people who's always late. How do you reset it? What do you do to become a different person than you are in terms of your own personal time habits? And this is a challenge, but it is infinitely doable, partly by faking yourself out. My husband makes me crazy because The funniest thing was that for 2 years, we commuted on the same train together, but we didn't leave the house at the same time. We walked to the train. The joke was, Rona and Mickey don't go together on the same train. Rona strolls like a lady to the train. And at the last minute, as the ding, 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 and you know, the arms coming down, you see Mickey running for the train, the last person just to get on at the last minute. I can't live like him. I can't wait till the last minute. I can't run like he does. My short little legs are slower. I have to get there early and be waiting for the train. How does my husband accommodate for the fact that he's a last minute person? He makes me crazy because his watch is never right. His watch is always set fast. I'm sure he would miss every train. His watch is always set 15 to 20 minutes fast. Now you would think, well, doesn't he knows it's set? He's the one who sets it. How is he faking himself out? Somehow, because it's always that way, it's been that way for years, he just thinks, he literally thinks ahead. He literally thinks, oh my gosh, he needs to be looking and be panicked and say, oh my gosh, I've missed the train, in order to get himself going and walk out the door. That strategy works for him. What has worked for me living with a man like this, because I'm the person who, you know, 10 minutes ago wanted to leave when we're going to a wedding or someplace together. I would be sitting there like this. You know, come on, let's go. What's worked for me is I read. I'm a big reader. So I will get all ready. I'll be totally dressed. I'm totally calm. And I used to sit there, you know, just boiling. And now I read. And when he's ready, and we go. You know, not for a train. If it were for a train, I would leave without him, and he would have to run, okay? But you have to reset your clock, and that requires really making a concerted effort and saying, I'm always late. I am going to... I'm going to be on time. My suggestion about this, by the way, is start small. So that if you're someone who is chronically, chronically late, then identify one place in your life where you're going to be on time. And make a commitment to always be on time or early for that thing. If you're someone who is always way, way, way too early, say, is there one place where I could relax about this? And just, it's not going to matter. Do I have to be the first one on carpool line every day? You know, do I have to be there when the bakery opens? So what? Let me just take a step back. I don't have to do that. Question or comment? Well, right. I can't imagine who you might be talking about. Then you have to make a plan. You have to make a plan to look at the watch together and to say, what? Change all the clocks in the house. You can play around with clocks, but also sometimes you do have to just confront somebody and say, you know, you're saying we're not late, but it was supposed to be 5 o'clock, we were there, and now it's 10 after, and so we are late. Now, part of the issue, by the way, is there are some people who, when they're late, don't think 10 minutes is late. So you have to say, are we on the same page here, that 10 minutes is late? And also, it's different being late for a formal appointment and being late for, you know, a wedding that's called for 6 that never starts. You know, Jewish time. We never, look at us, we never start anything exactly right on time. One of the biggest downfalls to time management is procrastination. And it is human, very, very much part of human nature to put things off. We are more likely to put off those things which are difficult for us, those things which are painful for us, those things which are not enjoyable for us. All of the things we need to do for good time management. How many people here want to say, oh good, a free Sunday, I'm cleaning closets? No, that's not what we want to do. Oh good, let me pay those bills. Somebody does? You have somebody who does? No. Oh, really? Right, never happens. No. It's there are some people who are driven and say, a free Sunday, I've got to clean the closets. But most of us are not, you know, lovers of organizing. We do it because there are benefits. What we have to get in tune with, what we have to do to ourselves to get over procrastination, is we have to beat ourselves up about what happens when we procrastinate and how negative it is. Because, by the way, all of us who procrastinate, and all of us do it in some areas of our lives, we hate the after effects. You hate it when, at the last minute, somebody told me this recently, they had to drive their child's college application to the college because it was too late to mail it. Not even FedEx, not even, you know, Overnight Express had to get in the car, drive 3 hours to hand deliver it to the admissions office. That is a perfect example of where not doing the time management up front costs you much more in the long run, and that you now have 6 hours in the car that you didn't have This woman doesn't have 6 hours to give. She had to take a day off and go drive 3 hours out of town to drop off a college application. We have to remind ourselves at that moment when we're saying, I don't really have to fill out this form tonight. I want to just relax with this show, or I want to play cards with my friends, or I want to go out. We have to remind ourselves of, oh yeah, but remember the last time I did this and how I had to drive those 6 hours. And we have to remind ourselves. One of the problems is we have selective amnesia. And in the moment when we're deciding to procrastinate, all we can think about is the good stuff we're enjoying at this moment and not the consequences that are going to happen afterwards. Also, another issue with some of us in procrastination is that we don't do because we're thinking big. We're saying, I have to clean closets. Oh my gosh, I have to clean the whole bedroom. I have to clean the whole house. I can't do it. I can't get organized. I did something as a personal experiment because I'm working with a woman who has huge time management and organizational issues, and I have not been successful in getting her to like move, because she keeps on saying, oh, if Dr. Novick, you should see my house. I don't know where to start. I can't start. So I did a personal experiment. I said, my house could use a touch or two of organizing. I don't have time to do everything, but I can do one little project, my bathroom, the master bathroom in my house. I am going to go through the medicine cabinet. I'm going to throw out the things that are from 1989 and no longer effective. I'm going to throw out the, you know, things with one pill left from the last time I had strep throat. I'm going to get rid of everything, and I'm going to clean off. I have a big vanity. I'm going to clean off the vanity, and I am going to make a commitment to keep that vanity clean from this point forward. And did it as because I wanted to see, is there any benefit to this? This woman keeps on telling me, like, I can't do anything because it'll be a drop in the bucket and it won't be any good. And I have to tell you that I learned something in this exercise, that not only was it a very doable project, it took me one, you know, Motze Shabbos for a few hours, I could do it, it was done. Not only was it very doable for me to keep a bathroom vanity clean, it's not like I said, I'm going to keep the whole bedroom, the whole house, the whole first floor, just a bathroom vanity clean. What I learned out of it was, this was very fulfilling. I loved getting up in the morning and looking at that vanity. I did this, and I'm still doing it, and I'm keeping it so clean. And I could go back to my patient and say, you know, I have to tell you something. I want you to try this. I want you to pick one thing, one surface, one desk, one counter, and all I want you to do this month is to clean that off and commit to keeping that clean. Forget the rest of the house. And I can tell you from my personal experience, it's going to feel good. So I think taking big tasks and breaking them into littler pieces that we can do will make a big difference. Step 5, before we run out of time and it's like the biggest piece, planning and scheduling. Time management is all about thinking ahead. It is all about anticipating and having a plan and a schedule. Initial investment of time is going to save you hours down the road. I like a strategy called look backwards to plan ahead. If you know you have a task that is, I don't know, give me a task that you need to do in your household. What's a task? Make lunches. Okay, make lunches is a perfect example, although it's a very small one. You have to make lunches for the week. If you go down to the kitchen on Tuesday morning to make lunches and there's no bread in the house, you cannot succeed in that task. Now you're going to be crazy running and getting the bread, whatever. If you say, okay, on Monday I need to make lunches, let me look back. That means by Monday morning I need to have bread in the house. Let me look backwards. When's the time before Monday that I'm going to go shopping? Sunday I'm at a conference. Not shopping Saturday. Saturday night the store's not open. Friday, I could do that. Will I get the bread? Will it stay? I don't think I'm shopping Friday, Thursday. So Thursday already, I have to know I need to buy the stuff for lunches. To me, another example of something that's longer is whether it's taxes or, you know, doing a school project with a child is a perfect example. A child has a report that's due the end of January. And they'll come home and they'll tell you, I have a report due the end of January. I like to sit with that child at that moment and say, okay, let's work backwards. You have a book report due the end of January on Benjamin Franklin. How much time, let's say a book is about 100 pages, how much time do you need to read the book? To read a 100-page book, you need 2 weeks? Okay, so that means by mid-January, you have to have the book in your hands. If you need to have but wait a minute, you need some days to write the report. So let's add a week. Let's go back a week. By the first week in January, by the 10th of January, you need to have the book in the house, so you have 2 weeks to read it and a week to write. Now, in order to have the book in the house by the 10th of January,
What day do we have to go to the library? Let's work backwards. Well, can't be Thursday night. You have drum lessons. Can't be Tuesday night. You have Mishmar. Can't be this night. But I drive carpool. Can't be this night. The library's not open late enough. Oh, a week earlier, we have to go to the library and get a Ben Franklin book. Now, if I don't do that, the whole schedule is going to be mixed up. And I think it's a very good skill to teach kids to take a complex task and literally pull out a calendar and say, okay, let's work backwards. Let's look backwards and count backwards. How many days do you need for this? How many days for that? How many days for that? I think it's a very good skill for kids. It's a good skill for us also. One of the problems we do is we overplan, which means we're guaranteed to fail. We not only try to put the rocks in the pickle jar, we say in addition to rocks, we're putting in some bricks. We're going to try to put in some, you know, boulders. We're going to get everything in there. We have 7,000 things on the to-do list. The rule of thumb, by the way, about to-do lists is that if you have more than 5 things on your daily to-do list, that you are doomed to failure. Now, what I would say is that you can have 5 boulders, 5 rocks on your to-do list. You can have other sand, pebbles, and water. But you should have 5 priorities that you're geared to do no matter what today that you're going to have success with. And other than that, those are extras that it would be nice if I get to them today, but it doesn't have to be. I once gave a time management lecture in another town, and a guy came, I'm not joking, a guy came up and he said, doctor, this is my time management schedule. I've got 17 pages color-coded. I use the stickums. And then, you know, you turn to this page, we use a wipe-off marker. I'm telling you, everybody broke out in hives. Every single person in the audience said, oh my gosh, he's scary. I mean, who runs a house like this? It was so labor-intensive. I couldn't figure it out, no matter what how he explained it. So that in terms of scheduling and systems, you need whatever works for you. If you're a paper and pencil person and you need notes, then use notes. If you're electronic and you need Palm Pilots, then use Palm Pilots. It's what works. To me, what's most important is that things do not get lost. So if there are 3 critical things on my list for today, and then 5 or 6 or 10 things, if I get to it, would be nice. What happens at the end of today with the 6 things that were, if I get to it, would be nice, that I didn't get to? How do those get transferred to the next to-do list for the next day so that they don't get lost? And that's where you need a system that, again, is fairly flexible and fluid and easy to do. But you want to be sure that you don't over-schedule yourself and use reasonable tools. In terms of making it a family affair, whatever tool you use, it needs to be communicated to everyone in the family. The fact that there's a calendar that you carry in your wallet but nobody else at home sees doesn't help anybody when a call comes in and says, the doctor's canceling, the pediatrician's canceling the appointment, or can you come a half hour early for this? You really do need a central family scheduling calendar. I am a firm believer that you need something on a refrigerator door or on a kitchen, you know, a central place in the family where things are posted and where everyone can see it and where, by the way, you have deniability so that when your children come and say, you didn't tell me I have a doctor's appointment, it's on the calendar. You know, you didn't tell me we have to go to grandma's, it's on the calendar. You see, I did tell you, I wrote it down, it's there. And when your children say, you didn't remember to pick me up, so you didn't put it on the calendar. As soon as they get old enough, they should get in the habit of using the central system registry to schedule events and items. And finally, and then we'll have any discussion or questions before we have to stop, that we need to pat ourselves, our spouses, and our children on the back when we do a job well done. So often it's just, you know, well, you got ready on time. Good. That's what you're supposed to do. We should be turning somersaults. We should be doing, you know, headstands when our children are ready on time for school. I, by the way, think it is a nace, it is a miracle that they get out of the house and on a bus and to school every day with the knapsacks, the lunchboxes, the notes from home at the young age that they do. It really is quite amazing that they do it. And I think they deserve love, hugs, kisses, and pats on the back just for doing that. And by the way, I think my husband deserves it just for making his train also. You know, adults also, when they are organized, when they do things on time, when they don't keep you waiting. It goes a long way to say, I really appreciated that, thanks. You know, gee, that was great that we got our taxes done early this year. It was terrific that, you know, this we could be ready for the holidays so early, or that we weren't rushing like mad people the last minute before we had to get out of the house. When all is said and done, perspective is critical. That it really is very, very important to take a moment and literally stop and smell the roses and say, you know what, it's very important to time manage. It's very important to be on time, to not procrastinate, but it's also important sometimes to say, you know what, these are the best moments of our lives. They're the only moments that matter. So what if we're cuddling on the floor and we really should be doing, let's cuddle a few extra minutes. You know, so what if you really should have gotten ready 5 minutes earlier and were a few minutes late to go to someone's house, but we were having such a good talk. And that sometimes we have to relieve ourselves of the incredible pressure that the world puts on us to be every place at the right time, to do everything on time, and to just say, you know, our children, our families, our spouses, they're what we're here for. And the very wonderful sage George Carlin said that life is not measured in the breaths we take, but in the moments that take our breaths away. And those moments come, thank God, as parents, pretty amazingly frequently. And it's more important than being on time or getting someplace to take those moments and really enjoy them with our children and our families. So thank you all very much, and I think we're supposed to go downstairs now. But any last questions? Yes?
Yeah, one of the problems I think that happens in families is that, like, one person might be a really good time manager and will end up taking more and more tasks that other people aren't doing, and then they'll be resentment building up, and, well, you know, or whatever.
Right.
I'm saying, like, how do you manage that?
The same way you have to manage when one person is a better cook and winds up doing all the cooking, is that in couples, we really have to openly negotiate and navigate and say, look, this isn't what I signed on for, and maybe it is the best use of my skills. If I'm the best chef in the family, maybe I should be the one who does all the cooking, but I just want to be recognized for it, and I also want to know, so what are you going to do to pick up, you know, the laundry or something else since I'm doing all the cooking. It may be, you know, in some families, I do believe we can't, it's not that we can't have pure parity. It's that sometimes in a family we have to use what we're each best at, and that's okay, again, if it's in the contract, if it's in the deal, if it's not what I signed on for, then we have to sit down together and say, wait a minute, I didn't sign on for this, and if I'm going to take on this responsibility, then what can you help me with? What can be different? The other piece of that is that, you know, we don't want to become enablers of each other. You know, I don't want to be the one who, I'm raising sons, so I don't want to be such a good cook and do all the typical female things so that I raise men who never can do any of those things. I feel very strongly that all my sons have to learn how to cook, do laundry, and take care of themselves. For their wives' sake, future wives' sake, I have to do that, as well as for the sake of the planet. But in the same way, if you have a spouse who, you know, you may feel bad, I'm doing all the time management, and then this way my spouse is never learning to do it because I take care of it. I pay all the bills, they're never learning to be fiscally responsible. So you may have to, again, sit down and say, listen, I'm willing to do this, but it's really not good for us long term. And it has to become a process and a discussion. Other comments or questions? Yeah. Well, one thing is, sometimes you just got to take a wider lens. You have little children. When you have little children, and you know, I have a nephew who's 2 years old, and my youngest is 12. So I'm like in different, you know, like my nephew comes over and time is so different because I'm literally counting the minutes till his mommy comes and gets him. Because like every minute is vigilance. What did he put in his mouth? What did he touch? Don't touch the wires. Don't pull this. Max, don't touch that. Max, we literally say his name is Max. We're maxed out after he leaves. I have a different level of exhaustion with teenagers in my house, but it's totally different. So one of the things that I think is very helpful is if you take the wide-angle lens and the big picture, is to realize that at this phase, when you're raising very small children, that you do not get the pictures in albums, but once a year, if that. And because you're busier with buckling the shoes and tying the laces and putting them in their car seats, there will come a time in life when you have much more time for those things, and where you lose time is, you know, sitting, laying on your pillow at night saying, where are they going to go to school, and who are they going to marry, and are they going to, you know, be financially independent? Are we making the right choices? There are different ways that your time gets eaten, but you will have the time for that. So at every, one of the wonders of parenthood is, it's never the same 2 days in a row. And if it feels like it's the same day in, day out, that's just for this week. Then your kids grow and change. You know, you're doing diapers endlessly until one day you're not. I remember feeling like my life had radically changed when I no longer carried a diaper bag. Like, oh my gosh, I don't have like this growth on the side of my hip. No child, no diaper bag. When the last one was out of diapers, it's like amazing how different your life is when you go into those phases of being a parent. So yes, there isn't time for it, but it's okay. There will be time for it later on. I hear a lot of noise, so I think we should head. Thank you.